Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, in this morning for Mike Collins. Today, memory, identity, and taste. What makes a Southern brand Southern? And how do brands tap into this region's complex story to sell everything from mayo to high fashion? Plus, what are some of the pitfalls and stereotypes they have to avoid? Companies like Coca-Cola, founded in Atlanta in 1886, and Krispy Kreme, founded in Winston-Salem in 1937, grew to become iconic not only because of their products, but because of how they made Southerners feel heard, seen, and represented, and then because of the other folks who wanted to get in on that. Companies like Bojangles today lean into their Southern roots and remind us it's bow time, while products like Duke's Mayonnaise have amassed a long time, dedicated, even maybe a cult following. So, why does it seem like all things Southern, even things that might have once been seen as sort of markers of even, dare say, a backwater region, from the twang in a voice to fried chicken and shrimp and grits, how have they risen to conquer mainstream America's cultural landscape? Joining me to talk about all this and more, we have three folks who are Southern brands in and of themselves. David Oakley is Executive Creative Director and co-founder of ad agency Boone Oakley in Charlotte.
Good morning, Eli.
Elizabeth Hudson's editor-in-chief of Our State Magazine.
Good morning.
Morning. And WFAE's own Tommy Tomlinson is an author, commentator, host of the Southbound podcast, and certified Southerner. Good morning.
Morning, y'all.
Actually, you are all certified Southerners, I believe. I'm sort of the outlier here. I'm from Maryland, which is technically south of the Mason-Dixon line, but that's kind of a formality. I've lived here for almost two decades, though, so I guess it'll do. So let's start with some definitions. What makes a brand feel Southern to you, and what's a Southern brand that just really captures that feeling? And Tommy, since you're from Georgia, the most southerly state represented here on this panel, let's start with you.
Sure. I was talking to my friend Tom Hanchett the other day about this, that I was going to be on the show and to talk about iconic Southern brands. And he said, oh, the stuff that ends up on a NASCAR fender. That's one way to think about it. You know, like these places that advertise to Southerners, you know, where are they going to show up? And one of the places they're going to show up is like a NASCAR car. And so I always think of like Mountain Dew or somewhere like that as something that's marketed not just to Southerners, but to give, you know, a sort of a Southern flavor to something or to aspire to some part of Southern culture. I don't know how many people know that Mountain Dew is sort of a reference to moonshine, but it certainly has that sort of, Mountain Dew kind of markets itself as sort of this party drink or party soft drink in some way. And I think that's part of it. It's like a lifestyle or whatever part of the Southern lifestyle that this brand wants you to aspire to or love or cherish, that's what they kind of shoot for.
And speaking of Southern soda lifestyle brands, this commercial from 1970 captures a bit of that Georgia feeling, or at least attempts to. It's actually called Georgia Nights.
We laugh and talk about such dreams on our porch on summer night. I drink my RC Cola and see my name in light. Oh, me and my RC, me and my RC.
And Tommy, I'll put you on the spot. Does that bring back any memories?
You know, that particular commercial, I do not remember. That sounds like kind of a Gladys Knight knockoff a little bit. Another famous Georgian. But that, you know, certainly RC was a big drink when I was growing up. It was, for one thing, it kind of appealed to the Southern value of getting more for your money, because an RC was cheaper than a Coke. You know, you could get a bigger bottle of RC for the same price. But then RC also had this sort of connection with moon pies and things like that. You know, you get an RC and a moon pie, and that was sort of a an iconic Southern breakfast in a way. And so those little jingles, things like people like David are really good at, those sort of, bolstered that idea that that was a part of our culture and our childhoods.
That's great. Elizabeth, how about you?
I think I'd throw in, I'm probably a part of the Pepsi generation. So that was my frame of reference more so than RC probably. But, you know, I think about Southern brands as really being connected to geography and probably landscape. You know, I live in Greensboro. So I think about brands like Cone Denim, which sprung up from the geography of textile mills here. Or I think about Brightleaf hot dogs in eastern North Carolina, you know, which you don't find those when you're out in the mountains, for instance. So I really do, and maybe that's just from being a part of Our State Magazine and traveling the state, I really see a lot of brands that I think just emerge from geography and really the landscape.
And yeah, some people, I think, feel that connection to landscapes and traditions and rooted places really strongly, and that can transfer to brands. Here's Duke's Mayo fan, Wendy Perry, talking about how she first came to love Duke's when her grandmother used it, and now how she shares it with her own grandson. And this is from their 100th anniversary celebration about 8 years ago.
I am glad that they have not changed the recipe in 100 years, because it's the same mayonnaise that my grandma introduced me to way back in the 60s. And to honor her at this occasion, I wore my grandma's necklace and earbobs, because she is the one responsible for telling me all about Duke's. She put it in everything.
And you can join our conversation today, too, like Wendy there. If there's a brand that's become part of a family tradition or a product that you consider uniquely Southern and can't live without, we want to know. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or leave us a comment on Facebook. And David, what about you?
Well, first of all, I've been caught off guard by this. I thought the whole show was about Southern bands. So I was ready to talk about the Allman Brothers, REM, Charlie Daniels Band, Avett's, you know. So I knew Tommy's a big music guy. So I thought that was all about. Now I realize why you have me on here.
Yeah, close enough.
The band thing. I want to just come back off a little bit of what Tommy said about Mountain Dew. When I was a kid growing up in Creedmoor, North Carolina, north of Raleigh, Mountain Dew was my favorite brand. It was my favorite soft drink. I didn't realize that it was actually originated as a mixer for moonshine. And that's really where it started with. But I really should have known that, because all the logo was basically a hillbilly, you know, with a shotgun. And it said, you know, Yahoo Mountain Dew. And the tagline was, "It'll tickle your innards." And I just love that. And I still love Mountain Dew. And when I moved to New York after college, they didn't have Mountain Dew. I mean, I used to drink Mountain Dew for breakfast instead of coffee. I'm just telling you, that's how much of a Southern brand it was. But it wasn't available in New York in the late 1980s.
Yeah. And, you know, I got to say, I grew up in the 90s and we had Mountain Dew in Maryland. There was definitely nobody with a shotgun saying Yahoo on the cans by that point. So I guess marketing changes as brands evolve and go national, which is something we'll talk about, too. And you helped develop the It's Bowtime slogan. So wanted to talk about that a little bit as well. We've got some sound from that, too.
Because it doesn't matter where you tailgate, with crispy hand-breaded chicken and scratch-made biscuits.
It's her!
You're not just tailgating. You're tailgating like a legend.
It's bow time. Head to Bojangles and grab your tailgate box today.
And I can tell you that worked, because my kids who are 7 and 4, that was one of the first brands that they identified as we were driving around Charlotte. And they will say that. So they certainly absorbed it. What's the story behind that line and the marketing there for Bojangles?
Well, one of the things about Bojangles that's so amazing and so great, it really is a cult brand. And when we started working with them back in 2010, there was only really one other brand that was kind of like it, I felt like, that was comparable to it, and that was In-N-Out Burger in California, a very regional brand that people, whenever they left that area, when they came back, they really wanted to go directly there. With Bojangles, it really was, when we started working with them, 90% of their restaurants were in North and South Carolina. And, you know, they've expanded way beyond that now. But at the time, it was such a place that whenever you traveled anywhere, or if you like moved to New York, or you moved out to, you know, Dallas or something, whenever you came back to this region, that was something that you had to have. That was your first stop after the airport. And even people that lived here, sometimes there's something about the food that you would have a craving for it. The biscuits are so good. They have a little salt in them. They've had that something about them. The Cajun filet biscuit, there's something in it that like you crave. And what we realized in doing a lot of consumer research is that people had to have it. And before we started working with Bojangles, they had a tagline called gotta wanna need to have a Bojangles. Oh, and that really talked about the craving that you had to have it at a certain time. So when we started working with them, we were trying to develop kind of a call to action, a rallying cry that summed that up, kind of, that when people had that urge or that craving, they knew that they had to have Bojangles right then. And that's how that's how It's Bow Time actually came about. I'll stop for a minute. I'm just kind of rambling. Sorry.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the expansion of Bojangles, and that's something we'll talk about too, and how brands can try to maintain some of that authenticity as they grow. You're listening to Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE. Let's take a step back. Why do people care about this sort of thing at all? I mean, aside from simply liking the way one kind of chicken tastes or preferring one brand of mayo, why do we get so emotionally identified with these brands that often are childhood associated too?
Well, I mean, I think that's part of it, is that these things that you have when you're a kid and you love, you know, you carry those forward into your adulthood. But I think it's also very similar to like sports teams.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, it's who you identify with. It's part of your, you know, identity, part of your culture or whatever. And so when you go out into the bigger world, you sort of identify with those things, and that's part of your team. You know, these things that you carry forward, like, I don't know, like Little Debbie's or Krispy Kreme's or Mountain Dew or whatever, becomes part of like the baggage, and I mean that in a good way, sort of the cultural baggage that you bring with you into not just your adulthood, but into your experiences in the wider world. You know, David was talking about moving to New York. I remember years ago, I did a story of, there's this little store in Brooklyn called, I think it's called the Carolina Country Store. And it's this woman who grew up in North Carolina, met all these other people in Brooklyn who longed for stuff like cheer wine and Lance crackers and stuff like that. And so she got, you know, a pipeline to those things, and just has this little kind of a bodega in Brooklyn where you could buy that stuff. And so that, you know, that was meaningful enough to enough people up there where she can make a living selling it to those things. And I think especially when you go away from somewhere and long for all kinds of things from home, those little brands of things are really important. To Bojangles, I remember doing a story on a Vietnamese family, Vietnamese American family from years ago. One of the kids moved to Chicago and really wanted Bojangles in Chicago and wrote the CEO about it.
Well, we'll see what happened when we return on Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo. In this morning for Mike Collins, we are talking Southern brands with Southern experts this morning and why selling the South works sometimes. Joining me are David Oakley, Executive Creative Director and co-founder of Charlotte ad agency Boone Oakley, Elizabeth Hudson, Editor-in-Chief of Our State Magazine, and WFAE's Tommy Tomlinson. So Lots of brands use their Southern roots to appeal to broader audiences and reinforce their hometown identity at the same time. Duke's Mayo, I think, is one example of that. And here is a Duke's Mayo ad from a few years ago that I think really leans into this.
If not, you're probably using the wrong mayo. That's because only Duke's Mayo has twang. It's that little Southern something that elevates food from good to downright ridiculous. Get Duke's. It's got twang.
So, Elizabeth, as someone who, you know, grew up in North Carolina and edits a regional magazine that is really focused on local, authentic stories and identity, I'm just wondering how marketing like that lands with you, and, you know, how do you see it as, how do you see the issue of authenticity when it comes to brands just kind of, you know, putting it right out there, like, we've got twang, you know, nothing subtle about it.
Yeah. I do think in that case, you really can see that Southern brands are this form of kind of cultural shorthand. You know, it's a, like with Duke's, I mean, my gosh, that's not just an ingredient. That's a character in a family cookbook. But, you know, I think you cannot just, as you well know, put something in a mason jar and call it a Southern brand. I mean, there really does need to be that sense of something that is rooted in place. We think a lot about that at our state. Obviously, we cover so many North Carolina things, and we're really conscious about not crossing that line into caricature. I think you can really, there's a fine line between something that feels rooted in place and real and something that feels a little manufactured and, you know, inauthentic.
And David, I know you've worked as an ad man in New York City and here in North Carolina for decades. When you went to New York a few decades ago, how did you approach that? And was there that same, I guess, desire that we see on the part of a lot of brands right now to associate themselves with the South?
Well, that's an interesting question. I was really kind of coming off of one of the things Elizabeth said about being inauthentic. I think when I first moved to New York, there was a campaign for Nestlé iced tea. And it was a really cool campaign, and it got a lot of traction nationally. It was about take the Nestlé plunge. And it was like so refreshing that you'd take a swig of this iced tea and suddenly you'd fall back into a swimming pool. And that was, you know, it was kind of cool. And I, you know, that's fun. And as a kid, you know, or, you know, at that time, you know, we would do the Nestlé plunge. We thought it was funny. But I never thought that Nestlé was a good tea. I never thought it was real. I thought it was like made from a mix. When I was growing up, my mom only made Louisiane tea. Mm. And Louisiane was like Louisiana. I mean, that was real and authentic Southern. That is a Southern brand to me. And I never thought Nestlé was really real because it wasn't from Louisiana. I don't know. That's kind of, to answer your question, that's it.
And, you know, when you're looking at developing a campaign, how do you approach, say, a regional campaign that is meant to appeal to people who, say, love a certain brand because it's the hometown brand, versus how do you look to position a brand maybe that's trying to grow beyond that and saying like, hey, we're from North Carolina, but, you know, we're brand X and we're making our national debut. How do you view that kind of difference of audience and approach there?
I think the main thing that you have to be aware of and be true to at all times is you have to be authentic to who the brand is. And if it's a North Carolina brand and they make biscuits and chicken, for example, you really have to talk about what they make, how they make it, and what it's about. It's got to stay the same. They have to be true to who they are, and their brand will go through and resonate wherever they are. That's what I believe.
And of course, being Southern, being a Southern brand, we've been talking about a lot of successful brands, but brands rise and fall, and many once thriving brands are struggling. Here's a 1999 ad for Piggly Wiggly that emphasizes the Southern connection.
My mama taught me how to shop at Piggly Wiggly.
We're the original self-service supermarket opened in 1916.
Piggly Wiggly appreciates my business.
Always down home, down the street.
There are savings in every aisle.
At Piggly Wiggly, it's about friends serving friends.
Smoked hams, 89 cents a pound. Hillshire smoked sausage or Polish sausage, $1.99. Lay's potato chips, two for $4.
And 89 cents a pound for ham. That was a good deal, even in 1999. So how do you view, or are there other Southern stalwart brands, other things from your childhood that have gone away or are struggling now that you miss, or things you can't get anymore that you think, boy, that was great when I was a kid. I wish that was still around.
Well, I'll jump in and say one thing that I don't know that I miss that much, but with I think almost a uniquely Southern thing, and that's headache powders. When I was growing up, most people in my family took these. I think there were three main brands. There was Goodies, BC, and Standback, if I remember right. And it's these little, I think if I remember, it was like aspirin and caffeine mixed together or something like that. And they came in this little powder in this little sleeve, and you just like turned it up like almost like you would do candy or something. And those things were ubiquitous when I was a kid. They were everywhere. I'm not sure if they still sell them or not, but I think of it as like, I remember mentioning it to people from other parts of the country, and they're like, what are you talking about? Like, they had no idea what they were, but that was something that I think got developed in Southern pharmacies and that sort of thing that it's kind of disappeared now, or is certainly way underground. But I remember it being a really big deal when I was growing up.
I remember the tagline for Stand Back. Do you remember it?
Something back with Stand, come back with Stand Back or something
Snap
like that?
Back with Stand Back.
That's it.
I haven't thought about that brand in years. That's so funny. I love that.
Tommy, you're making me think of Vicks VapoRub, which of course is still around. But I mean, if you're a Southerner, if you live in this state, you've got a jar of Vicks somewhere in a bathroom cabinet. If you're me, it's probably like 30 years old. But it never goes bad. It's still in there.
No, it's like fine wine. It's aging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to do with it, but I'm definitely not going to throw it away.
You know, another brand that like I grew up going to, they were everywhere, was the grocery store chain Winn-Dixie. And, you know, I never thought about it, and I don't know why they've gone away. I don't know. And did they change their name? I mean, maybe you guys can have the answer to it. It just hit me right now, but I guess the Dixie word was not politically correct, I guess.
Yeah.
I think there are still a few Winn-Dixies around, but it has kind of gone out of fashion for sure.
And I think the ones that are around were acquired by someone, which kind of leads into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is that as brands grow or change or are acquired, seek new markets, they often either get out-of-state owners or they move beyond state and regional borders. I'm thinking here about, you know, Bojangles opening in New Jersey, or RC Cola, which isn't a Georgia thing anymore, but I believe is owned by Keurig Dr. Pepper Company, and it's sold in 60 countries. It's just sort of an off-brand cola now. Is it inevitable that brands lose something of that authenticity when they grow, expand, or are acquired? What happens to their soul?
I mean,
go ahead, Elizabeth.
I'm thinking about Krispy Kreme, you know, which originated in Winston-Salem and has grown certainly beyond the borders of the state and even the country. I mean, it seems to be, no matter where you go now, you can find a Krispy Kreme. And I mean, I think about brands that are able to endure, have a sense of continuity. You kind of feel like if you walk into a Krispy Kreme, no matter where you are, it sort of feels like the one that started in North Carolina. I mean, I think that's important to a brand to maintain that sense of continuity for sure. I mean, I can't help but think that Southern brands and also Southern identity really are just sort of wrapped up in the sensory experience. There's a sensory quality to Southern brands that endure and last. And maybe that's hand in hand with our identity. You know, you can hear the way we talk as Southern identity. You can taste it in our sweet tea and in the tang of our barbecue and Mount Olive pickles and, you know, that kind of thing. So I think as long as a brand is able to maintain that continuity of wherever they started from, and you don't lose those threads, then they can survive an expansion and an evolution.
I worry about this with Duke's Mayo, because Duke's got bought by, I believe, Hugh McCall's hedge fund.
Yes, Valfurrius.
Bought Duke's at some point, and then it's just recently resold it to some other hedge fund. And, you know, once kind of private equity gets involved in a lot of different things, they streamline, they change, they are more efficient. And I don't know enough about Duke's process to know if there's something, you know, fundamental to it that would be changed or altered with new ownership. But I do know it's not owned by the same people that started with them. And so they're vulnerable to that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And just backing up a second to Krispy Kreme, we got a comment from Maureen on Facebook. Maureen says she's from Massachusetts and landed in Greenville, North Carolina for college. Everyone told her she had to try Krispy Kreme donuts. She jokes that her dad was a police officer in Massachusetts and she might as well have been born at a Dunkin'. Mm-hmm. But she said, finally, while working in Virginia Beach, a colleague had had enough, did a U-turn and nabbed some hot donuts. Oh my goodness. I regret every day of my Southern life that didn't include a hot glazed Krispy Kreme donut. And that is how a Massachusetts girl was converted to a Krispy Kreme lifelong fan. So I guess that's something else about brands and this identity we're talking about is, especially for a region like Charlotte that has a big influx of people, adopting the local brands, adopting the local flavor can almost be a signifier of, hey, I'm here now, you know, I can become a quote-unquote Southerner, whatever that means. The counter, I guess, is I feel like a lot of the time we're in a great homogenization, you know, a lot of regional differences, dialects, and quirks are being wiped out by technology, by social media, by the instant and ubiquitous communication and ordering whatever brand you want wherever you are. So, David, in a world where teenagers in Alabama learn the latest K-pop dances on TikTok, does positioning brands like this still make sense? And, you know, do you find it still has the same resonance?
Well, everything's changing every day. I mean, more things have changed in the last 20 years, probably, than in the first 80 years of my life. You didn't know that I was 100, did you?
You look good. No,
I mean, so many things have changed, and this business has changed so much, all because of what you said about technology and the connectivity. And I'm really repeating what you said, but what you said is so spot on, because a person that lives in, you know, Billings, Montana, and a person who lives in Orlando, Florida, and a person who lives in, you know, Maine, all are together chatting about something. So dialects are going away. What makes a true Southern brand? Are all brands starting to become worldwide, homogenous? I mean, every stop on the interstate now, I mean, if you drive through Texas, you're hitting Bojangles. Bojangles is going to be in, you know, Las Vegas. It's everywhere. It's hard. You just have to be true as a brand to what you do. And I think that one of the things, and it's not so much about branding, it's about operations in the business. Like, you know, Elizabeth was bringing up Krispy Kreme, and that is an example of you have to be able to do hot, fresh wherever you are. And you have to be able to replicate it. And it has to be exactly like it is in Winston-Salem, exactly like it is in Charlotte. If it's in Maine, it's got to be the same. And it's got to be able to, you know, give that delight that you get when you taste it. The same with Bojangles. That's the challenge that they're going to have in a way markets. Can they still do the product as well as they can when they have the supply chain and everything to do it really closely, like they do in North, South Carolina and the South?
Yeah, and I guess I can also see a counter argument where in a world of homogenization, if you want to stand out and break through, it could actually be more important to try to say, we're grounded somewhere, we are something, we are not just, you know, Like you go on Amazon and there's, you look for shirts and there's 500 brands that are just like literally a mishmash of letters that don't even spell anything. And I find that I now tend to scroll past those regardless of the prices and look for a recognizable brand. You're listening to Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE. One thing I was wondering is there's all these brands that have gotten popular like Southern Proper, Southern Tide, Southern Marsh, apparel brands. Do you need Southern in the name? Is that just too in your face sometimes?
I mean, I think some of these things, like, I'm not sure, you know, there's a difference between the brand name and the product. Like, you know, with Bojangles or Krispy Kreme or something, you're getting something that is substantively different than what you, like a Krispy Kreme donut's different than a Dunkin' Donut, right? But if you're selling like a polo shirt, I'm not sure how the Southern brand polo shirt is substantially different than like an Izod, for example. So I think that's a little bit harder sell to me as a customer to try to figure out like why should I be buying this instead of, because there's probably, you know, the fact that there's a brand attached to it, there's probably a premium price attached to it as well. And so why am I buying this rather than something else? What is it giving me? And maybe it's, I think there are maybe some people who look for some sort of status, like maybe the little logo on that brand, you know, means something to them or elevates them and their social circle. I think that's a dicey thing as to whether it actually works or not.
And when you look at, I guess, clothes, you know, I think we're revealing ourselves here, you and me, Tommy, as not fashion mavens, but it can maybe be a little harder for us to tell the difference.
I do proudly wear some Bass Pro Shops gear. I will say that.
There so. You go. Well,
you know, that's where I think, mm-hmm. that's where I think story comes into play. You know, I mean, that's the idea of rooted in Southernness is we're storytellers, you know, so these strong brands that are able to look at Reese Witherspoon's Draper James line, you know, that's got a sense of story and personality associated with it in the same way that
we'll come right back to that here on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, and this morning for Mike Collins, we're talking this hour about what makes a brand Southern and why we care. I'm joined by David Oakley, Executive Creative Director and co-founder of Charlotte ad agency Boone Oakley, Elizabeth Hudson, Editor-in-Chief of Our State Magazine, and WFAE's own commentator, Tommy Tomlinson. So, let's talk a little bit more about Southern brands and storytelling. You have influencers, celebrities like Reese Witherspoon, who are built very successful Southern fashion and lifestyle brands. Here she is talking about a Draper James and how that is rooted in her experience of the South.
Pretty please. It's not just a way to get what you want. It's a lifestyle. Draper James is all about the grace and charm that I was raised with growing up in Nashville, Tennessee. In the South, you can never be too kind, too gracious, or too well-dressed.
So, Elizabeth, you were talking about storytelling and the role that that plays. You heard Reese Witherspoon talking about her own story there, the story of her life, and how she ties that to the broader story of a Southern experience. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah, that storytelling is really what helps us understand that shared set of regional experiences that we have. I mean, I think that's, you know, kind of backing up to Krispy Kreme again that we were just talking about. I'm also thinking about a Carolina Beach donut from Britt's Donuts. Anybody who's ever been to Carolina Beach knows that donut. Is it similar to a Krispy Kreme? I mean, kind of, you know, it's a glazed donut, but because it's got this deep storytelling to that particular company, been in the same place on the boardwalk, you know, on and on. You know where you are when you're there. It's that sense of story that I think deepens that brand. I mean, that's something we look at with everything in our state. You know, I think about Niece's sausage. To me, Niece's, you know, sure, it's sausage, but I think about Andrea Niece. I think about the people behind that brand, and that's where story really comes into play that I think gives you some layers. You know, great branding is all about these multiple layers, and you know.
Yeah. David, what do you think about the role of storytelling? And, you know, as someone who helps craft a brand's story, how do you feel or how do you approach that process when you're sitting down with brand X? Do you just say, tell me your story?
Well, that's a start. Absolutely. You really have to get into the authentic part of what the brand is all about. And it's not an easy process because a lot of things, you know, like sometimes you have to undo things with a brand, and there might be a story that they're telling in a way that's not right. But we really try to get to the core essence of what the brand is all about and what they can be true and authentic and tell their story in a way that nobody else can. You know, Walt Disney once said, the more you're like yourself, the less you're like everybody else. And it's really about being true to yourself. And if a brand can be who they are, they're not like everybody else. And you find the place that they're supposed to be, and you plant a flag in the ground that says, this is who I am as a brand, and we're going to always have this flag as our North Star, and we'll always come back to that.
And the legacy and the stories of the South are, of course, complicated. I think this region's legacy is intertwined with race more than any part of the U.S., and a lot of brands that became iconic with Southern Black-focused imagery, like Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben's, for example, they've had to either change with the times or face serious backlash. Aunt Jemima was originally portrayed as a sort of mammy stereotype character by live Black women who went around and did actual demonstrations more than 100 years ago. There's also the issue of stereotypes. You know, you can just point to, I don't know, a Forrest Gump type accent and say, you know, there's still stereotypes out there about the South. How do brands navigate these pitfalls, and how do they need to think about, I guess, the pluses and potential minuses of explicitly saying, you know, we are going to be a brand rooted in the South? And how have you seen that play out?
Well, I think Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben are kind of an interesting case because that lasted a long, long time, like way longer than it should have, right? If I remember right, they didn't really make any meaningful changes to those brands until George Floyd, when George Floyd was murdered in 2020, and there was everybody just kind of took this re-look at sort of how we were talking about race and thinking about race and that sort of thing. And that's when those brands finally changed. And I think the problem, if you are the company that has one of those brands, is that they built up all this equity over the years and all these things we were talking about earlier on, where people saw those things as part of their identity. And I'm sure a lot of the people who bought Aunt Jemima either didn't think or didn't think hard enough about what that brand meant, you know, but it was a part of their growing up or a part of their identity, and they didn't want to get rid of it. And the companies that had them were making money off of it and stuff. And so I think those things are sometimes hard to let go of. And other times it's you know, a little easier. There's more subtle changes. You know, I think of like KFC, right? Which used to be obviously Kentucky Fried Chicken, and they had the Colonel, who was sort of this kind of white stereotype of his own. And now they've sort of soft pedaled that. You don't really see the Colonel anymore. And in fact, if I remember right, they don't even really call it Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore. is just KFC, which is this global brand now. It's everywhere. And so they managed, I think, to sort of move away from whatever stereotypes were there without paying too much of a price for it.
And David, have you worked with brands or seen, you know, that kind of tiptoeing through a minefield of potential, you know, either stereotypes or, you know, negative associations, especially in the past 10 years as we've really become more attuned to those issues?
Eli, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head that would answer that question with a, you know, no, I don't think so. Not in the last few years, no.
And Elizabeth, how do you see the connection between, you know, people's positive associations with a brand that might also have some really negative associations tied to it for other people? You know, just personally, I grew up right outside Washington, D.C. I had a ton of merchandise growing up with that said Redskins on it. And, you know, that was the team name forever. So, you know, to me personally in my life, I felt that myself when they were talking about changing the team name.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we are a landscape of shifting narratives, and I think that's important to be constantly aware of how language changes and evolves and moves, you know, not necessarily brand specific, but I think about even North Carolina historic sites and how they've kind of navigated the territory of, you know, I'm recalling specifically Somerset Plantation in eastern North Carolina for years and years and years. This historic site interpreted life of the plantation owner. And it's only just been recently that this particular historic site has recognized that 800 enslaved people were on that property living there, you know, and have started to interpret that. That's recent. I mean, that's something that's just happened. And I think, you know, things like this can translate into brands, all kinds of connotations. You know, there's that famous study that John Shelton Reed did many years ago where he combed through a phone book to look for all the business names that had Dixie in front of it and Southern in front of it to sort of compare. And as we were just talking about with Winn-Dixie, you're seeing a lot of that language kind of falling by the wayside. You know, language is slow, I think, in a lot of ways to adapt and morph. So it's something that brands, I think, need to constantly be aware of as meaning, as we, you know, imbue words with meaning. What does it mean? You know, what do certain words mean and the connotations they carry forth?
Yeah, the changes in words like Dixie and I'm thinking also of how many subdivisions have plantation in their name, right? And how many plantations have been marketed as wedding venues and event venues, and how that's changed. It's really fascinating to see that evolve, and also just how recent it is. Another thing that I think has changed, and, you know, I was born in the mid-80s, so I'm doing some inferring here, but not so long ago, I feel like the South wasn't necessarily an area that national brands were clamoring to be tied to. You know, now everything from the explosion in country music popularity to pickup trucks being the perennial top-selling vehicle nationwide to the exploding population actually in southern states, I think just really points to a southernization more broadly of the U.S. Tommy, how different is that from when you were growing up?
Well, I think it is different, but I think it's always been there. I know a friend of mine, John Archibald, who writes a newspaper column in Alabama, he and his colleagues call it the Alabamification of the rest of the country. You know, I think you see it in politics in a lot of ways, you see it in sports in a lot of ways, and you see it in culture and brands in a lot of ways. I mean, there are Southerners everywhere. Even if they never grew up in the South or never been to the South, there are people who like listen to a lot of country music or, you know, love to go to Cracker Barrel or whatever it is. That's those sort of like stereotypical things that we often think of as Southern. There are a lot of people who live those lifestyles who just don't live here. And I think a lot of companies and brands have realized there's a lot of money to be made in that. And so I think one of the things that I thought of that has been going on for a long time is sort of this idea of trucks. You know, a truck, I think, was sort of branded as more of a Southern thing when I was growing up, even though obviously people buy trucks everywhere. But I think the idea of the truck as being this like thing of farmers might use, or you might take fishing or something like that, has sort of expanded. And that sort of Southern icon of the, you know, the F-150 or the pickup truck or something like that has sort of taken over. I think the F-150 has been the biggest selling vehicle in America for years and years now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one way where that's sort of leaked into the broader culture.
Well, Tommy, I think you're dead on right about one thing that you said earlier about the team aspect of things. People want to be on the Southern team. And this goes into a whole nother subject for me, because I have this whole thing about some of the biggest Southern brands right now. You don't even think of them as brands. You think of them as colleges, but like the Georgia Bulldogs, the Alabama Crimson Tide, the North Carolina Tar Heels, those are gigantic Southern brands that people all over the world want to be associated with, whether or not they went to these colleges. I'm really interested, as it gets into a whole nother subject, about what happens with college sports but the prevalence of the Southeastern Conference in football and how that is such a strong giant brand. The South is doing well in sports, and a lot of people want to be on our team.
And I'm curious, as someone who went to work in advertising in New York City in the 80s, you know, as a Southern guy going up there then, were you an outlier in the ad world then, and more so than now, maybe?
Okay, this is a really, I don't know if this is interesting or not, but when I went there, I was very paranoid about my Southern accent and being in New York, and, you know, like you're kind of known as, you know, dumb and like not as smart because you have that. And but I was like really determined to prove that I was like kind of smart. I could do this stuff. But what I realized, that just being true to who I am and having my being who I was, really was an advantage, because not everyone knew, had met anybody from the South. This is in the like late 80s on Madison Avenue. And it was an advantage. And I realized that, you know what, being yourself is the best thing you can ever do in life. And so I was so paranoid about it, but it ended up being one of my biggest strengths there. And I feel like I try to tell that and help to preach that to brands, to just be yourself and to other people and everything. So yeah, that's one of the biggest lessons I learned moving up north from North Carolina.
And it's Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE. To thine own self be true. Old advice that's still really valid today. So to wrap things up here, if you were putting one brand or product in a time capsule for people 1,000 years to understand, dig up and understand the South, your version of it, your understanding of it, what would it be and why?
Well, I guess I'll go first. I would have to be a fairly big time capsule, because I would want to bury a Waffle House. First of all, if I happen to be like cryogenically frozen and reanimated 1,000 years from now, I would want to walk straight to a Waffle House and get some grits and eggs first thing in the morning. I think you talk about like a brand that has, you know, I don't even think, without even trying that hard, made itself this icon of so many things, not just the South, but this whole culture of late night and everybody's welcome and all that sort of thing. I don't know that anybody does that better than Waffle House.
And Elizabeth, in just a few seconds.
Well, I think I'd pick Pepsi, just, you know, the Born in the Carolinas slogan mm-hmm. still resonates. And, you know, I know people who in a restaurant, if they don't have Pepsi, they're drinking water.
And David.
I've got to say Yahoo Mountain Dew, man.
Yahoo Mountain Dew. Well, there you go. That's David Oakley, co-founder of ad agency Boone Oakley, Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief of Our State Magazine, and WFAE's own commentator extraordinaire, Tommy Tomlinson. Thank you all for joining us on this hour of Charlotte Talks. I'm Eli Portillo. See you tomorrow.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.